Almost live from a very cool corner of Midtown Sacramento, it's the Nate Darling Show, featuring Mel Gelbart and Larry Mead. Now, from one end of his cheap IKEA couch, here's Nate.
Hello and welcome to show number 11? 12? It's show number 12!
Wow.
We've made it to a dozen shows, everybody.
Yay.
I know, it's exciting, isn't it? With me, as always, is my friend Mel. Hello, Mel.
Hi, welcome back, everybody.
And Larry is not with us tonight because Larry is playing gay softball.
He's very good at it, though.
Well, maybe so, but he's also
an award-winning gay softball player.
Yeah, he is indeed. All of those things. So sitting in for Larry once again is our friend Jason. How are you, Jason?
I'm doing swell.
Jason Casey, for those who need to know the last name as well. We should probably get something done with your name in it since Larry's kind of flaked out on us before. Just in case. We have you on standby. Like when Regis takes a day. He's off more than Regis, really, is what's going on here.
Yeah.
I think Larry's a great guy, and I miss him.
Larry's a fantastic guy, and Larry doesn't do any of this out of spite or out of being a dick.
He's just incredibly busy.
He's incredibly busy, and he has occasional spaciness. And it's one of those things that I can't be mad at him for, but I get very angry at the situation. And I literally will do this. I'll clench my fists, throw them skyward, and go, Larry!
He needs like a personal assistant.
I don't think that would help. I think he's just so caught up in seeing Kesha that nothing makes sense to him other than going to see Kesha.
That could be it. That's like crack, like to gay men, I've heard.
It really is.
On the show tonight, actually in about 3 minutes, Sean Greenwood, who is the poobah of PR for Ben and Jerry's, is going to be calling in. Our first phone guest.
I'm so excited.
I know. It's great. They have introduced their new, their brand new flavor. It's it's an homage to an SNL sketch, and it's called Sweaty Balls. So while we're waiting for Sean, we're going to kill a minute or so here. Let's listen to the sketch that sort of set it all off. Actually, now I'm going to...
The history of television...
There's a lot of introduction here. This came from the actor's studio, I believe.
It's a few moments of Pete Sweaty's appearance on National Public Radio.
I can't help but notice, Pete, your balls are a little misshapen.
That's because I rested them on a hot stove for too long.
Can I touch your balls?
Go ahead, but be careful. They're very delicate.
Wow. I can't wait to get my mouth around this ball. Ooh, I like the way your balls smell.
You know, this bit works with just the audio, too.
Uh-huh.
Hey, very much so.
Do whatever you want to them, ladies. My balls are here for your pleasure.
Wow, Pete. I have to say, your balls are so tender.
Well, there's no beating my balls. They're made from a secret sweaty family recipe. No one can resist my sweaty balls.
They sure got a lot of mileage out of a pretty juvenile bit. It's just so funny, though.
I know, and you'll have to, if you haven't seen it yet, we'll put it on the show extras page, but it's very much a send-off of public radio. And the funny thing about Sacramento is Sacramento, like a few other places, people tell me that they listen to public radio. And I've seen ratings numbers in most places, and people don't really listen to public radio. They like to say they do, and they go, oh, I was listening to this thing on NPR this morning, and it was great. So they'll, like, listen maybe once a month or twice a month just so that they can pull out the, I was listening to public radio this morning. I'm very smart. I don't need to listen to the morning zoo because I'm very, very smart.
I listen to the NPR podcast, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell. I do
I like Wait, Wait, Don't Tell, and I like Fresh Air.
they are very popular podcasts, but I'm just talking about the regular NPR.
What, it's still around? Well, I thought it got shut down.
It didn't get shut down. It's not going to get shut down. The actual cost to run NPR is minuscule when you look at it in the grand scheme of things. It's one of those paper tigers that conservatives like to go, we're going to shut down NPR and we're going to save a lot of money for the government. No, you're not. I mean, no. You're going to save a little bit of money for the government, but not really enough to say so. So that's kind of where it came from, that whole delivery of, we're here talking to Pete Schwede about blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
It's like that. If we talked like this, I wonder if we'd get 3 million downloads for the podcast.
It does make us sound smart.
It makes us sound soothing. You know what? It makes me want to go to sleep. I'm actually going to go to sleep if I listen to that. Hey, I think that's our friend Sean. Hello, you're on the air.
Boy, that sounds impendingly scary.
I know, doesn't it? Is this Sean?
Hey, man, how you doing?
I'm doing very well. We have started the podcast and expecting you to call in. For everybody, this is Sean Greenwood. He is the Poobah of PR from Ben & Jerry's.
Is that really your official title? Can we call you Mr. Poobah?
It says it on the business guide. I'm willing to share. It does say it on the business guide. It's a 4-year degree.
and just for complete information, Sean and I went to high school together. So I've known known Sean for a long time.
Full disclosure, thanks.
Don't
for that.
Take anything we say here honestly or seriously.
So right now, Sean is in southern Vermont, where there was a lot of flooding from the tropical storm a little while ago. How is the area looking now? How are the roads in the area?
I tell you, I drove through. I drove from Burlingame to Rochester, Vermont today, and it was a mess. It was like, it felt like Beirut. It was like single lane dirt bridges. I mean, it's the kind of thing you see on MASH growing up. So it's a little bit scary that way, a little bit crazy. Just a ton of work that needs to happen. But one of the cool things, I get a couple days. You know, at my office at Ben & Jerry's headquarters, all the employees get 5 days a year to volunteer and get out in the community and do something cool if they want to support. And after the most recent flooding, our CEO said, hey, I don't care if you've used your 5 days already, get out there and do some stuff to support the state. So I said, I'm going to punch out for a couple days and hop on the scoop truck and drive down to the southern part of the state. It's a little harder to get to. So I went from Rochester today and definitely some pretty messed up roads. It took about 3 hours to make an 80-mile trip. So that took a while, and then tonight, Rutland just came down and did some time sampling to some National Guard folks. There's a National Guard here from South Carolina, from Virginia and West Virginia, who are up here putting stuff back together. So they were able to sit up there and scoop some ice cream for, I think, that 190 guys who are out there who are actually camping at the local ice hockey arena is where they put them up and caught. So, just thank God it's great to have some help.
That is awesome. Now I've been following it because there's a Facebook page, and it's really weird to like this, but you can like Vermont Flooding 2011, and right. it's got all of the updates of stuff. And there was a picture a couple days ago from Ludlow, which the Shaw's supermarket is now set up. Essentially, they're set up in a tent in the parking lot. That's the supermarket for the community. So
it's amazing, isn't it?
And the National Guard from all over there—they're the ones that are doing the one-lane dirt bridges. It's basically like an invasion force. So it's just crazy when you start thinking about what was there a couple of weeks ago and what's sort of left now.
Yeah, it kind of comes through quick, and one of the nice things talking with the National Guard guys—they're just saying how great Vermonters have been and how receptive, and the Vermonters who are out there with signs and the yard saying thank you to the National Guard and to other, local support. And everybody's just trying to pull together and do the right thing. You remember that deal growing up, man. It's just, there's a lot of community feeling. So that's it's one of the things we got going for us.
Yeah, that's the big thing. And if you're not really familiar with sort of it's like that in a lot of places, too. People will help out their neighbors. And that happens a lot in different places and in different ways. But it's very ingrained in the communities in Vermont because you have a lot of places that are super isolated. So you kind of have to rely on your neighbor because people from a few towns over are farther away than you would think. And this really sort of drives that home. Go ahead, Sean.
I would say you and I can probably confess to most of the time we learned that growing up when you're 16, learning how to drive in the snow, and you come around the corner a little too fast, and the next thing you know, you're walking to the next guy's house up who's got a tractor saying, hey, can you pull my car back out of the snowbank?
And that actually happened to me. I didn't have to get pulled out, but that happened to me about a mile from my house. I came over the top of a hill, the exact same thing you're talking about, and the back end of my car came around, went up in the air, and I got out of my car, walked around, it looked around, and I had snow tires, so I was able to drive out. But yeah, it's and my dad has pulled a lot of people out of snowbanks over the years.
Alcohol not involved at all.
No. This was like a 3 in the afternoon deal. There was no. It was just youth and stupidity.
Just maybe an afternoon beer after Sacred Heart High School.
I think he knows you really well.
He does. Sean was one of the lucky ones in Vermont, and they raised the drinking age from 18 to 21. But if you were 18 before they raised it,
you got grandfathered.
You were grandfathered in.
Awesome.
And Sean was one of the guys who was grandfathered in. And I always felt bad for one of your friends, John, I'm not going to mention his last name. You know who I'm talking about. I believe his birthday was what, 3 days after the cutoff?
Yeah.
So his birthday was like July 3rd or something like that. So he had to wait an extra 3 years to legally buy beer, which doesn't seem like much unless you're 18 and everybody else can buy beer. So
for us, you know, everyone was grandfathered in, then you became very popular.
Yes, it went through the roof. So let's talk about Ben and Jerry's. We wanted to talk about the new flavor, the Shweddy Balls, that is hit shelves. I went on a trek to try and find some Shweddy Balls, and I could not find any out here in Sacramento.
It's because all the roads washed away.
Well, they correct me if I'm wrong on this, Sean, but the Ben and Jerry's for the West Coast is made somewhere other than Vermont? Or is it all made in Vermont? Did we lose him? No, he's still there.
Maybe he muted us, or we muted him.
No, I did not mute him.
I upset him.
I don't know what happened here. We sort of lost it for a second. You know, I'm going to hang up for a second here. I'm just going to end that call. And, yes, let's create a new contact. We can do that.
I want to know who gets to name the ice cream. We need to ask him that because they have all these amazing names, and I want to know whose job that is because I think it's the best job ever.
Oh, it's a fan. It's.
Actually, that's the second best job. The best job is who gets to taste all the new flavors because that was my dream growing up as a child, as many kids' dreams
hey,
were.
Hey, Sean, please leave a message.
Oh, he thinks he's still on the phone with us.
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. What? I'll wait for him to call back because. So we'll talk about that. He'll call back in a second. I hope. But
you know what the other thing I like about Ben and Jerry's is?
What's that?
I feel like it's ice cream just for grown-ups, and it makes me feel special. Mm-hmm. Like kids wouldn't like it because it's all kind of, for the most part, except for a couple flavors, it's more complicated. There's a lot of sort of alcohol flavors in it and lots of different combinations of stuff. So it's like when you order a good pizza.
There we go. We got you back, Sean. There we go.
Alrighty.
Okay. Sorry about that. So we were talking about getting the Ben and Jerry's ice cream out here on the West Coast. Is all of Ben and Jerry's made in Vermont, or is some of it made in other plants around the country?
So we have two manufacturing plants that we own in Vermont, Ben and Jerry's. Of those, they have about a half a dozen production lines total. Then there's one single line in a plant in Henderson, Nevada, that we use for some of the production out west. So what we try to do is stem a little bit of the extra shipping that we have to do out there, so it's still predominantly made in Vermont. And then there is a plant in Hellendoorn in the Netherlands. So we have our international distribution really focuses more out of that plant, whereas the two Vermont plants kind of handle about 85% of the U.S. demand.
Are they all the same flavors, or do people in the Netherlands, like in Europe or whatever, like and different weird flavors than us, just like when I go to like Hawaii and they like weird, like lily corn flavor.
You know, most of them are still pretty much the classic Ben and Jerry's ones, so it's still mostly the Cherry Garcia Chunky Monkey kind of stuff. There's a couple of exceptions to that around the globe where they'll usually still working kind of within the framework though, so they might take Imagine World Peace that has chocolate peace signs. You might take those pea stems out and put it like in a chocolate and vanilla and make a Nordic water piece for a local program that they do there about, you know, awareness about not polluting the water and that kind of thing. So it still works kind of with the same basic building blocks of flavor. So I don't think we have any, you know, that are like a crazy outlandish flavor that you hadn't heard of here. It'd be more like saying, no, we pulled the chunk out of Chubby Hubby and put that in chocolate ice cream.
And while we lost you for a second, Mel was talking about one of the reasons that she really likes the Ben and Jerry's is because it's more of an adult sort of ice cream, because it's got the really complex flavors and some of the alcohol type flavors in, like the Schweppe Balls has rum flavor in it.
Yeah, there's definitely probably a little more sophisticated palate. You know, to start with, there's a lot less air. So instead of, you know, I think if you go test that, you go put a pint of Ben and Jerry's on a scale next to like a half gallon of some ice cream, you'll get a lot less air in Ben and Jerry's. So it weighs pretty much the same as a half gallon of kind of those standard brands. And what that usually results in is a much denser mouthfeel, less air, more butterfat, higher quality ingredients. So, you know, it's you got to pay to get that kind of quality, but we definitely think people are worth it.
So as far as, and I don't know if you heard this because it was right around the time we lost you, I went looking for some of the new Schweppe Balls, and I could not find any in Sacramento. Is that something that's going to be coming over the next little bit? Is it sort of being rolled out? Because I know it's a limited release, but is it something?
Limited-wise usually just means it's for a number of months, so usually 3 to 4 months, but it's still supposed to be a national release. So it might take a little bit extra time to get it out to the West Coast just because it was produced here in Vermont. And so the issue is if we put it on a truck here and send it out, it has to go from trucks here from Ben & Jerry's out to our distributors across the country. And so there's different distributors for each part of the country then. So you might have, in a really large city, you might have a couple of distributors. In a smaller area like, you know, Vermont, New Hampshire, Maine, there might be one distributor. So then those independent distributors go and sell Ben & Jerry's ice cream to the supermarkets and to convenience stores. And then to make things a little bit more complicated, some outlets even have their own distribution system. So if you're like a 7-Eleven, let's say, you might have your own distribution system where you then take care of it. So the challenge with that is you might drop off, we might make Schweppe Balls ice cream on March 1st, and then you ship it out, and some places might have it on the shelves in 3 days, and some places it might still be shipping 2 weeks later.
Okay, well, that explains it. So if you don't see it, keep looking, because it's coming. Now, because I couldn't find it, I decided to go with the same theme, which is inspired by entertainment. And so this weekend, I got a little bit of the Americone Dream, which is Stephen Colbert's, and right. a little bit of Jimmy Fallon's late night snack.
Why Jimmy Fallon? Yeah. Of all the people, why does Jimmy Fallon get an ice cream? I'm curious.
Jimmy was nice enough to, last summer in June, they did a skit. He and his crew on the show did a skit. And if you remember the Paul Simon backup singers from the Graceland album, Ladysmith Black Mambazo, they do a skit on Jimmy Fallon called Ladysmith Snack Mambazo, where they sing about their favorite foods and things that they like. So they had done a skit where Jimmy and the rest of the Roots band dresses up in these tunic kind of outfits and stand around the half circle, and they're singing, Ben and Jerry, he made so good. And so they sit and do the whole thing. You can find it, I think, Hulu or some of those sites have it. So just really funny skit. And it was like this 3-minute ode to Ben and Jerry's. And so because it was so cool, we ended up, you know, calling over to his office and saying, we want to send over ice cream to say thanks, which we do often when we see some cool stuff, you know, whether it's on TV or elsewhere. And then we ended up getting a call back from Jimmy's assistant saying, hey, Jimmy wants to get on the phone and thank you guys personally, which doesn't always happen. You know, so we ended up getting on the phone together, the director of marketing and myself, and talking and said, you know, hey, thanks. It was really nice what you did. I hope you enjoy the ice cream. And, you know, I said, I've done a lot of work with Stephen Colbert and his team down in New York, and said, look, I'm down there, you know, every month or so would love to swing by with ice cream for your crew. And then I was down in New York a couple weeks later and did just that. And while we're there, you know, Jimmy said, hey, why don't you come in the office and talk with me and Mike Shoemaker, who's Jimmy's show producer and was, you know, at Saturday Night Live for 20 years, just a great guy. And just talking with those guys, we got to the conversation of, hey, what if we were going to do a flavor together? And that's how the whole thing started.
And I was a little apprehensive about it when I first saw what was in it. And one of our graphic designers at work, I work at the NBC affiliate out here in Sacramento, and one of our graphic designers is like, my favorite flavor is Jimmy Fallon's late night snack. So I'm like, you know, what the hell? I'll give it a try. It was phenomenal. I was not expecting it to be, because you sort of read the ingredients and it's like.
It has potato chips
in it. It has potato, chocolate covered potato chips. It's got the sweet and the salty. It's fantastic.
Wait, I'm sorry, but I haven't. I've never had that before. So what's everything inside of this late night snack that
the late Sean, do you know what's in the late night snack off the top of your head?
Yeah, late night snacks, vanilla ice cream, fudge covered potato chip clusters, and salty caramel swirl.
Oh, outrageous, right? God.
Yeah, and it really is. I mean, when you first hear it, it's like, huh. But then when you taste it and you get all of those flavors, like you were talking about the complex flavors, it's just really every sort of flavor that your tongue would crave in one sort of bite. And it was so good. It really was.
So
a good thing for people, you know, some people like making their own ice cream at home, get those little makers. A good thing to remember, one of the things that our research and development team, our flavor gurus work on, is it's not just the sweet or the salty, but there's also that mouthfeel, that texture piece. So having something crunchy in there is also a good thing. So if you're making ice cream at home and you're saying, I want to make something real unique, you may do a balsamic vinegar in it. You may do, you know, some salt or something like that. But don't forget the texture of things, because people like when they're eating that way. You know, obviously you want the good flavor combination, but also that ability to crunch through something, to have differences in texture is really cool.
Oh, yeah, no, chocolate malt crunch, like from Thrifty or from a Rite Aid, whatever you want to call it, like their chocolate malt crunch is, like, when I was a kid, I remember eating it in the little crunch balls. Were like so amazing.
That's why the Chunky Monkey freaks me out, because the walnuts, the crunch of the walnuts. That's my, until I tasted your mint, which is sublime. Chunky Monkey was all I would eat, but the mint is the mintiest mint of all mints ever made. I swear to God, and I am a picky bitch when it comes to ice cream. I mean, it has to be good. I don't eat regular store brand ice cream. It is the most mintiest mint ever.
Well, you know, our story behind like flavorings too for Ben and Jerry's is it wasn't that we actually said, oh, right, let's use this amount of flavoring. It was when they first started out, Jerry was the guy who was doing all the production, and Ben was the guy who was the official taste tester. And so Jerry would make a batch and feed it to Ben, and Ben would say, ah, that's pretty good, but add like more mint extract. And they'd try another batch, and Ben would say, better, but add a little more mint extract. So Jerry would say, you know, he's reading the formulas, you know, they got those little government self-help books on how to make ice cream. You know, so it was like, he'd say, yeah, this thing says you should only use X amount of vanilla extract or mint extract, and now I'm using twice as much, Ben. And Ben's like, yeah, that's perfect, just like that. Well, come to find out, years later, they tested Ben out, and Ben has like these huge sinus problems, so he can't really taste it again.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I've seen Ben and Jerry, and yeah, that actually doesn't surprise me at all. No.
Yep.
Well, thank God for that, because it worked out well for us, because it's just
amazing.
That's where you try like the Chunky Monkey and you go, man, that banana flavor knocks you out. It's so strong banana.
Yeah.
That's the reason why.
Well, I don't even like, I only eat bananas. I don't like banana candy. I don't like banana cake. I don't like banana anything. And I was a little hesitant to try it. It, again, it just blew my socks off. It's my favorite. So since we're doing a lot of PR for you right now and saying how much we love Ben and Jerry's, just remember Chunky Monkey is Mel's favorite ice cream.
That is what we're talking about.
Now, that was the one thing, as I was mentioning to people that we were going to have you on the show this week, that was everybody's like, can we get free ice cream? And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe you go out and buy some of your own.
Can you do a road trip certainly with your scoop
you
truck?
You know, if I knew there was going to be a sweaty taste opportunity, I would have sent you out a few pints on dry ice. But we, I feel it's only proper, being journalists as you folks are, to set you up now with some flavors.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Oh. I'm actually heading back to Vermont tomorrow night, so I hope to catch up with you at some point, maybe.
That would be great.
So we'll figure that out off the air. But one of the questions I had was, now a lot of the celebrity flavors, they come about very sort of organically, like with Jimmy Fallon. and they come about pretty quickly. The sweaty balls sketch, and we played that just before you called in, that happened several years ago on SNL. What sort of prompted that now? What was the impetus behind that?
You know, we've got our director of marketing is a real great guy. He's been working there. He started just after I did in 1988, so he's been there a long time too. And he's been pulling for a while, saying, hey, it's a great idea. Both it's a fun skit, and you know, if you take a step back and go, first of all, the opportunity to be an ice cream company and partner with Saturday Night Live, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Like, we're the luckiest company in the world to be able to do those cool things with Jimmy Fallon, with Elton John, and with Saturday Night Live, to be able to partner. Like, you know, if you're just a regular ice cream company, you call our newest flavor Rumball ice cream, and people might try it or might not, and no one talks about it. But because we're Ben and Jerry's, and because we get an opportunity to go out and do some of these fun things with other companies, and I think a lot of that's based on your history, what you've done previously, it opens the door, and so people like Saturday Night Live are more willing to play along. And I think that's where we've gone after him for a couple of years, saying, hey, guys, we think this could be a real cool idea, and I think they finally caved in.
So was the hard sell to NBC and SNL, or was the harder sell more to the quote unquote suits upstairs that are like, we can't name something sweaty balls?
Yeah, no, I don't. I think we had support from our from our parent company Unilever. We had support from. I think the challenge was getting back to Saturday Night Live, and obviously they've got a lot of clout invested in their history and their skits that they've done. So I think it was being able to work with those folks and. We've played around with some other ideas before, and this was one that just kind of seemed to stick. And it was, again, it's hard if you're just going to say, okay, I'm going to do a skit about, Justin Timberlake doing Omeletteville and saying, okay, if it's got nothing tied to ice cream, then it's a little more of a stretch. The cool thing with Sweaty Balls was it's a funny Saturday Night Live sketch. And when you go and you guys just say you're just playing it again, if you imagine somebody wrote that sketch, and you guys can appreciate this, the level of brilliance that you need to have as a writer to write a skit that's about watching a radio show and how they're supposed to be interacting and how it then the innuendo and the double entendre that's weaved into it, it's really this brilliance that's just amazing. And that's kind of one of the cool things about Saturday Night Live when you look at 37 years of them, really kind of delivering year after year to be able to do that. So we're thrilled to be able to do this partnership with them after, working on them for a little while. I think they were really happy to have Sweaty Balls take off.
Now, can we expect Justin Timberlake's Dick in a Box flavor? Is that next?
I think I'm assuming at this point our Saturday Night Live flavor will probably slow down. I'm guessing I don't think we're going to have an annual SNL flavor, so I wouldn't put any money on it. But like you're saying, the Sweaty Ball skit was a dozen years old. It's not like it's a brand new skit, and it's one of those things. It's just a classic Saturday Night Live skit, and I think that's why we were thrilled to say if you can name it, it's a fun flavor when you have rum balls and malted milk balls and ice cream and. It also lends itself to the flavor itself. It was about the holiday time of year, rum balls, and we made this kind of a holiday flavor with rum balls.
And that's one of the really cool things about Ben and Jerry's is if you're from Vermont, and you'll meet people from Vermont everywhere because we all, not everybody, but a lot of people leave the state, but you don't really ever forget where you're from. And you go so many places and there's a Ben and Jerry's scoop shop or you go into a grocery store and there's Ben and Jerry's and it's just... For me, anyway, it's sort of like a little taste of home, and
yeah.
I think that sort of plays into it a lot because you start to look at stuff and it's like it's one of those things. The other thing is not related to Ben and Jerry's, but another Vermont company is Woodchuck Hard Cider, which was something that I enjoyed a lot of this summer, and a lot of it was just because there's other hard ciders out there. I was just this nostalgia, but sort of a tie to home. And I think that sort of plays into it a lot.
And I think we find it all the time when people are talking about Vermont. We're lucky to get involved when National Geographic says, hey, we're visiting 50 states in 50 days. We want to do kind of a reach out to what do people think of when they think Vermont. And, we're lucky to usually be up there with like maple syrup.
It is fantastic. You seriously have to have one of the best jobs. In terms of you get to go to work with people who will get behind an idea for sweaty balls, which is awesome, by the way.
Which
Speaking as someone who's worked with a lot of suits who would not have a sense of humor about something like that, because, well, how will that look on our image? And it's like, well, it's funny, so people will get it. It's cool. And so it's fantastic. And to be able to have a product that you can really get behind like that is very cool as well.
And a company that's known for being sort of hip and young, and that's why you can get away with that stuff, is it's known as being a not stuffy, liberal, activist, fun, involved with their community company, which is a great image.
Yeah, and I think you earn that, right? That's part of it, I think, for Ben & Jerry's has been, we've been doing it for 30 plus years, where, you know, a couple years ago when they legalized gay marriage in Vermont, we went out and renamed our Chubby Hubby ice cream Hubby Hubby for the month. And we went on the streets with this remarked up package and scooped out Hubby Hubby samples. And, you know, we said, we're doing this because it's what we believe in. We believe everyone should have the right to be able to marry whoever they're in love with, and that no one else should be telling you who you need to marry. And I think what we've seen is opportunities that have come up, whether it's that opportunity, whether it's working with Jimmy Fallon or Stephen Colbert or Elton John or whomever else it is, I think people are much more willing to open the doors and say, we'd love to do something with you guys, because time and time again, you go out there and you take a stand for what you believe in. You're not afraid to say, if you believe in global warming, you're going to do a Dave Matthews Band flavor with folks on global warming. And so I think you earn that.
So it's just one of those things that it's a really good company. It's a really good product. So and one of the cool things that you guys have now, and this is the way I sampled one of the flavors because I didn't have the full pint, was the little single serving size of the Ben & Jerry's. Those are great, because if you want to try a new flavor, but you're like, I don't know if I want a whole pint of it, those things are fantastic.
Yeah, there's a way you can try a variety. For some people, they like it for the portion control. I myself feel like it's to get to know a pint, really, I kind of have to sit down, or get to know a flavor, I have to sit down with a pint and go top to bottom like I did with some shred balls a couple weeks ago. But, you know, each their own. If that size works for you and you can get to try a couple different flavors, that's cool too.
I totally understand about needing to get to know something really well when you first sit down with it. Like, there's times when you definitely need to try something from beginning to end, and to know, you know, how it is in its purest form.
But yeah, they really, really great stuff. So now that we've spent all this time talking about how awesome your company is, I want to throw this one extra thing in about Sean. And I didn't realize this until I caught up with him on Facebook a little while ago. You're a hot air balloonist.
That is correct.
How the hell does somebody get into hot air ballooning? That's one thing I've kind of been curious about. How do you get into that?
You know, I hate to bring it back to work, but we actually had a program at work where Ben had always, for years, said, all right, you guys we gotta decorate a hot air balloon to look like Ben & Jerry. So we had two balloons made, a traditional round one and one that looks like a 6-7-story ice cream cone of Cherry Garcia. And so we had both these things made, and part of my job was to go out and kind of do the PR around them. And I went out and hopped in one of these things, went for a ride of the pilot, and was like, this is some cool, cool stuff. And from that, you know, one of the nicest things was I was going to get married the same year. That was in 2000, and my wife and I had saved up $25,000 for our wedding. And about a month before our wedding, I said, honey, I'd really like a hot air balloon. And I said, you know, it's a cool thing. And she said, great, how much does it cost? And I said, I think around $25,000. And she said, go ahead.
You have the best.
She's a great wife.
You have the best wife ever.
Well, I knew. I was about best to say before ever. Before you even said that, I would say you have to be happily married. Nobody can be as freaking cool as you and not have the best wife. And I'm jealous.
I'm definitely going to have her listen to this now. She'll know it. 10 years, baby. I love you. You know, it was great, though, being exposed to ballooning out there. And then, you know, being able to, you can, the truth is, it's not like a big mystical thing. You can buy a used balloon system probably for $5,000 to $10,000. So, you know, people, that's not chump change, but it's not far from if you go like, hey, I'm going to go buy a boat and I'm going to use once a weekend, you know, 10 times a year, it's not a crazy amount of money. So you can do it. It's a pretty cool hobby, though. The challenge, of course, where Nate and I grew up is There's not a lot of big, flat, wide-open landing spots. So
no, there are not.
That'll be a straight I'll share when you're home, Nate. We can go over my 1 8-hour flight that I had one day looking for a spot.
Well, see, that's the beauty of the Sacramento Valley. There's nothing but flat spots to put down your balloon in. The only thing you have to worry about is a bad neighborhood or the river.
Or the airport.
Well, yeah, the airport. That goes without saying.
So ironically, I went ballooning a year or two ago, and we got off course or whatever and ended up in some poor woman's backyard.
Well, then you needed a better balloon pilot.
Yeah. But she wasn't super happy.
I sort of want to wrap this up, Sean, with sort of an insight. Do you happen to know off the top of your head if the Del Bar is still open?
Oh, God.
That bring it back?
The Del Bar. My understanding is I don't believe the Del Bar is open anymore. I think someone I talked to, you know, I saw an old buddy of ours, Chris Coney, out this weekend in Philadelphia, and we were talking about it, saying, I don't think, you know, we were seeing a couple of those bars that we used to go to when we were 13, 14 years old up there. You know, that was back when Canada would let anybody in, and I think things have changed.
They've changed significantly because I remember very well going up, and the Del Bar is just across the border in Derby Line, Vermont, and is it Rock Island, Quebec? I think it's Rock Island, Quebec. Rock Island,
yeah,
stands.
Right.
You could literally see from Canadian customs, you could see the Hotel Del Monte and the Del Bar. And when you would pull up to customs, the customs officer in Canada would say, "Where are you going?" And you would point and go, "Del Bar," and they would go, "Okay." So that's how it was. So if you weren't grandfathered in the States, all you had to do was go to Canada. But
you're always grandfather. You're a grandchild into Canada.
It's something special. It's not just a special growing up in Vermont, but being able to go into Canada and sort of get an international sort of experience when you're growing up is something very cool too. And we haven't talked about that a ton on the podcast, but that's something I'm going to mine for later on. For people,
yeah, like those 6.5% beers and a $10 pack of smokes, you can't find that anywhere.
No, it's very special, and I am actually going to make a trip when I'm back. I'm going to go up and for the oddest reason, I'm probably going to get some beer to have while I'm there, but I'm also going to get some poutine sauce to bring back.
Oh
with me,
yeah,
because
you gotta have that.
And I know I'm going into Lake Mead for a second here, but I found places out here where you can get the raw cheddar cheese curd, so I can actually make my own poutine in Sacramento, California. So that's very awesome.
Don't let the Canadians know, they'll be flocking to the warmer weather.
Yeah, well, they flock through here on the ones from the Western Canada, the ones from Western Canada flock down through here to go to Palm Springs. So they come through anyway, but. Anyway, Sean, thank you so much for joining us as our first phone guest.
This is impressive.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. I'm actually – we do the podcast from my living room. I am on one end of my cheap IKEA couch.
I'm on the other end of his cheap IKEA couch.
I know. And for you, this is – I mean, granted, it's not being in the Edge Studios in Washington, D.C. with Mike O'Mara and Kirk McEwen, but, you know, we're out on the internet too.
I'll tell you, I was just at a fair trade conference this weekend, and one of the things I said to the participants there when I was speaking to them was social media, a recent study I was just reading, was over 65% of folks who do social media consider themselves equivalent to reporters and media in the other realm, the non-social media spot. And I said, I certainly consider them. I think at Ben & Jerry's, we certainly do in terms of working with bloggers and working with folks who tweet, folks who get out there in other parts of social media that are, maybe years ago not really regarded as equivalent. And I think it's really important stuff. I think those are folks who are influencers that are making a big difference out there. So we are happy anytime. And since you're so positive this time, let's commit to doing another show where I can just tell you all the screw ups and the flavor mistakes.
Oh, right? Yes.
Yes, please.
Yes.
We will absolutely set that up. So, Sean, thank you again. We will talk to you soon. Sean Greenwood, who is the poobah of PR for Ben & Jerry's. Get out and try the new Sweaty Balls ice cream or any other Ben & Jerry's ice cream. You shan't be sorry. Thanks a lot, Sean.
Bye, Sean.
Bye, Sean.
See you guys. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, man. Bye. All right, how cool was that, guys?
He's so, like, cool. He's so well-spoken. Like, not well-spoken, like, in, you know, in a weird way, but, like,
he's not just... Blackmail. You don't need to say he's well-spoken.
He's so, like... I don't know. He just so chill. He didn't say a lot. Yeah, he speaks really
nicely.
Yeah, I
don't think he ever said to be honest.
He knows his stuff.
He's pretty...
Sean has been a really cool dude ever since I've known him, and he's a couple years ahead of me in school. See, I just said There you go.
Sorry.
Now I sound like an asshole. Thanks. Yeah, that's right. You notice he also didn't curse because he's used to doing regular radio interviews where you can't do that. But he's been a very cool dude for as long as I've known him, and it's very cool when you see people you grew up with that have cool jobs like that. And he posted last week, the tinging you're hearing is Jason hit the mic stand with that.
We've been ricocheting off the mic stand a lot tonight. The cat did it earlier.
The cat headbutted my bottle into the mic stand, which was awesome. Oh, hold on. Larry Mead, who is playing gay softball, has just texted that he's on his way.
Yay.
So that's what we're hearing in the background.
Ooh.
I know, it's exciting. He'll be here for the next show because I'm going back to Vermont. So next week we will have a show for you, but we're going to record it right after this show. So it's really cool when someone you grew up with who is a good guy gets a good job, and I'm not saying a job that pays a ton of money, but a job that's like really obviously very fulfilling and very cool to do. And let's be honest, I think Ben and Jerry, probably stoners. I'm just going to throw it out there.
What?
I'm not besmirching them. I'm just going off of what I sort of see and expect.
I couldn't tell like the story of when I was like 18 and like I was working as a security guard, working hella odd hours. And I would come home at like 3:30 in the morning, and I would stop off at the liquor store and get a pint of Ben and Jerry's every night I got off work. And I'd smoke some weed in the backyard because I didn't want my dad to know. And then I would go inside. And I'd go inside and eat some.
It does cure what ails you.
Hold on, that's for later. My iPod is messed up. My iPod is messed up.
That was scary. I thought it was one of our new sound effects.
Yeah. Well, it sort of is. We'll get to that in one second. But okay, moving on from the Ben and Jerry's, yes. Reese Witherspoon. Did you hear about Reese Witherspoon?
Bless her little heart.
I love Reese Witherspoon, even though she's got two kids and is married for a second time to somebody else.
That's because she's very Sandra Bullocky. She's very likable girl next door. She mm-hmm. You think she'd be your friend?
Well, and she was married to Ryan Philippe before, who turned out to be a
dick?
Douchebag.
Douche.
But
which then gives her the Jennifer Aniston appeal, because then she's the sweet jilted girl
with two kids.
Exactly.
Which for myself, I'm not really. I'm going to say it right out. I'm sort of a all guys are selfish, but I know for myself, and this is kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't thing for women. If you have kids and I'm dating you, I'm going to be kind of bummed out because you can't give me the attention that I as a man would like. But if you do give me all the attention that I as a man would like, I'm going to think you're a bad mom because you're ignoring your kid. So, and I recognize that. And that's why I don't put myself in the situation of dating women with kids. I did it one time when I was like 23, 24 years old, and she was like 21, 22, and she had a little kid. And it didn't work out that well for a lot of reasons, and I swore I wouldn't do it again, but that's why. It's not because I'm a dick who doesn't like kids. I like kids fine. I'd like my own kids, but I also recognize that especially early on in a relationship, that's the way it's going to be. And the other reason is the baby daddy, if he is in the picture, I don't want to have to compete with that guy.
Drama. Mm.
It's just the way I'm wired. I've got a friend who got married about a year and a half ago. It was the last time I was back east, and he, far more mature than I am, he was an intern of mine, and at 22, he was like pulled off the set of Mad Men before anybody saw Mad Men. He didn't dress like that, but he had that I'm a mature guy sort of vibe, and he married somebody who has a kid, and I think the kid's 6 or 7 years old, and they're fantastic, and he does really well with that. I just know that I would do very poorly.
You do realize you're going to have to either start dating teenagers or be really selective, because at our age, everybody's got kids or is divorced.
Yeah, it's starting to happen.
I know.
I'm starting to notice that also.
It's one of those. Well, you know what?
I am a unicorn in this day and age.
It's tough. It really is. Now, I'm not opposed to dating.
Unicorn.
I'm not opposed to dating younger. And I realize that there is a cutoff age for that because of a lot of things.
17 and a half?
No, not 17 and a half. You need to be able to rent a car.
Oh, okay.
you need to be able to rent a car on your own.
That's his reason.
That's like the bare minimum cutoff. Ex-wife number two just turned 30, so that's probably about where my... What? Mel's got her mouth open so wide right now. What?
I had no idea.
What did you...
You were such a cradle robber.
Look, we're not going to get into that, but she actually pursued me to begin with. It wasn't that I was a cradle robber. Mel, all of my friends are...
Good for you. I'm not going to give you any grief. I just think that's awesome. That's
just kind of the way I'm wired. I don't look my age.
You act really like hip and cool and young. Like you relate to people 10 years younger than
right.
you.
Right. All of my friends are 6, 8, 10 years younger than I am. So I fit in very... It's not like I stick out like, you know, the old guy dating the young girl. It doesn't come out like that. But when you start to sort of break down stuff, I do realize that. So anyway, that's kind of where I am with stuff.
I've always felt I've always felt my mom, my stepfather didn't have any kids when he married my mom. And I've always felt like it would be terrible of me. And like, if I put that as a precursor, like to dating a woman that I found awesome, you know what I mean? If that would happen, I would have been robbed of a cool stepdad for the most part, you know? So I feel like I can't...
But it's hard. It's hard to step into a family.
Right. And I'm just saying that for me, at this point in my life, I don't know that I could be the cool stepdad. And nothing against the kid. And not knowing that I can be fair in that situation, I'm not going to put myself in a situation like that. And I don't want to put somebody else in a situation like that.
I would be a really cool stepdad.
You would be.
We didn't actually talk about what happened to Reese.
Oh, yeah, I know. We never said actually what happened. We just started talking about your personal life.
Reese Witherspoon, who is 35, so thus in my range, she is recovering at home. She was hit by a car while she was out jogging and by an 84-year-old driver.
Oh, poor thing.
And the 84-year-old is apparently very upset, very distraught by the situation. Probably very confused and wondering what happened. No, anyway, apparently hit Reese Witherspoon in a jogging in a crosswalk. Thankfully, she wasn't hurt too severely. The car was going about 20 miles an hour, and the driver has been off the road since then, mostly because the driver has to take a driver's test before they can actually get behind the wheel again. But I think that once you reach a certain age, every year or two, you should probably at least have to go in and get your eyes checked to make sure that you can see what's going on behind the wheel, and maybe even take a driver's test.
You do have to take a driver's test. My grandma just had to take her driver's test, and she's funny because, I mean, she's my grandma. She's 88, 89 years old, and she believes people should get tested every year, too. She's like, there are some crazy people out there driving. I'm like, yeah, grandma. You're one of them. I love you.
She's like, I know a 71-year-old that young and just doesn't.
Reckless.
She's reckless.
All right. So this is something I found on the internet, and this isn't new. This has been out for a while. It's actually got 2 million views on YouTube. This is a goat yelling like a dude. You know what really makes me angry about the goat? It's good. Do you know how long it's going to take us to get 2 million downloads on the podcast? This fucking goat in the middle of nowhere has 2 million people watching this video.
Hey.
Okay, so the goat, 2 million viewers, and somebody found a way to tie the goat into our now dearly departed from TV Oprah.
I appreciated this. Once I saw this part of it, I got it more because the goat didn't – I mean, it did sound sort of like a yelling person, but it sounded like a goat to me till I heard this, and then I went, oh, my God.
So anyway, Oprah Winfrey, the Oprah Winfrey Show, as of Friday, that was her last repeat of her last show, and someone decided to mash up the goat with Oprah Winfrey introducing celebrities.
Here is the vision herself, Mariah Carey.
Avril Lavigne!
Coming out 70 more. Ladies and gentlemen, Bette Midler! Please welcome Julia Roberts!
my dear delightful friend Julia Roberts. Please welcome John Kennedy. Please welcome Joss Stone.
It was about a year and a half ago when I first met Madonna.
That was his favorite.
Hugh Jackman! Johnny Depp!
Anyway, so you get the idea.
It's amazing that Oprah's range really is exactly the same as a goat.
Oh, that was so awesome.
Well, the goat probably came after her, so it's probably the goat has the range of Oprah.
Maybe they trained the goat to sound like
they
Oprah.
Okay. All right.
That just blew my mind. Now I'm really thinking about
it. I don't think people in Kazakhstan train the goat to sound like Oprah.
You don't know. They could be very poor.
And that's all they'd be watching.
How would they be able to watch Oprah if they're that poor in Kazakhstan?
They have a smartphone that they all share in the village.
They've got a video camera. We know that.
Exactly.
I'm going to get a little heavy on the show right now. Just sort of dial back the hot. I know it's a weird sort of, it's like we crashed into Reese Witherspoon. But this podcast is going to be uploaded a few days after the anniversary of 9/11. So I wanted to just take a couple minutes for each of us to talk about kind of where we were, when 9/11 happened, what we were doing, and, sort of our initial impressions of it and kind of where it left us 10 years later. So, Mel, where do you remember where you were when 9/11 happened?
I was sitting at my desk at the outpatient psych services place that I worked.
And where were you? What were you in Ohio?
No, I was here. I was in Sacramento. I moved here in 2000.
Okay.
So I was in Sacramento. I had just gotten to work. And I was working. I was minding my own business in my office. And somebody came in and said to get on the computer and get onto the news.
Now, what time was that?
It was in the morning.
Right. But with the time change, I'm just kind of wondering what time, like 9 o'clock here.
All I know is I think
it was like 8:50.
I got on right before the second tower was hit.
Okay, so you were actually at work really early.
It was early in the morning.
Yeah, because the first tower was hit by a plane at about, and I don't have the exact time. It was sometime between 10 minutes and 5 minutes of 9 Eastern time.
Yeah.
And the second plane hit about 15 or 20 minutes later. So you were actually at work pretty early.
I was in my office. It was super quiet. There was other people there, so other people must have come in, and somebody came in. And I think at first, I tend to be a skeptical person in general, and I think at first I thought it was a joke.
Yeah.
I just couldn't wrap my brain around it, and I kept waiting for the punchline or something.
Right. It was very surreal. Jason, where were you when you
I was living in Joshua Tree, California, working at a place called the Beatnik Cafe. And the night before, I gotten into like an argument with this young lady from Israel and telling me how terrible America was and how we are so horrible. Like, seriously, I remember the like argument and like I was jealous because she was into the rock climber guy and I was like the Beatnik, you know, guy. And so anyhow, like the next morning, I remember waking up and I'd fallen asleep to Gilligan's Island that previous evening, and it was on TNT, and TNT doesn't have news on it ever. And I remember waking up and seeing that happening, like it was like on the TV, and it was like 7 o'clock in the morning, and that's all they were showing was these things happening. And I was like, well, this is a movie. What movie is this? I've never seen this movie before.
Yeah, it was
like,
too surreal to really be reality.
I kind of, fortunately or unfortunately, I was working at WPTZ, the NBC affiliate in Plattsburgh, New York. And I would go in a little, or I was a commercial producer, I would go in to work a little bit early because I had friends who worked on the morning news crew. So I would go in and visit with them until they would do the Today Show cut-in, and then that aired at like 5 minutes of nine. So I was in the news studio, and all of a sudden, they came back from like a taped piece, and they cut to the shot of the hole in the World Trade Center. And Matt Lauer and Katie Couric didn't quite know what to think of it because no one did. It was just very, no one knew what was going on. And it was just very, very surreal with everything. And you just watched everything sort of unfold. And we just sort of sat there transfixed with what was going on because, you know, the people at NBC News, they don't know what's going on. They're looking at that. And growing up on the East Coast in Vermont, and I went to Plattsburgh State in New York, and I had a lot of classmates who lived in the city. It was just very, it's surreal. It was like getting punched in the gut, and you just really didn't know what was going on. And so it was a lot of watching, kind of seeing, and then the when the towers came down, it was just like, oh my God. And there were people jumping out of the towers. And it's one of the reasons I can't watch any of the footage. Like, there was a lot of stuff on TV this past weekend and before, and I can't watch any of it because, I mean, even the slightest mention of it, and I literally will start to cry because I will never, ever, if I live to be 5,000 years old, forget what went on that day. Yeah. And part of what happened afterward as a TV station was then it's unfolding. The next thing you have to do is, okay, we have to cover this as a story and how it impacts everybody in our area. And you're talking about a 5-hour drive to New York City. And one of the things that I had to do was they sent me out to go cover some news. And the first place they sent me was the fire station in Plattsburgh, New York. And Plattsburgh, New York is a city about 20,000 people. And I remember being there, and this is probably 12:15 in the afternoon. So we're talking 3 hours after the second tower was hit. And all of these firefighters are there. And these aren't like professional full-time firefighters. A lot of them are volunteers, and some of them are professionals. They were all there to draw names out of a hat, not to see who had to go down to Ground Zero and help out, but they were drawing names out of the hat to see who got to go down to Ground Zero and see what was going on. And you have to remember, at that time, nobody knew what was going on. Nobody knew if there was more attacks coming. Nobody knew what was next. And just to see the people that were willing to go ahead and do that, just completely, I mean, that's something that has stuck with me.
Those are the moments that make you really proud.
I remember when I one of my close friends at the time was from the city and lived in Greenwich Village, had been there for a long time. And I remember I drove with him and another friend across country a month afterwards because he didn't want to fly. Nobody wanted to fly. He didn't want to fly back to New York from the West Coast because he was almost on one of those planes. But he had to leave earlier. But when getting there and coming through the tunnel, and like he just like exploded. I never seen like him cry or even be emotional. And he was like, he said, "You remember them being built, you know, watching them go up." And we drove directly to the site. Like, we'd just gone on this like 7-day drive, like, and sleeping, you know, in the back of a car and shit. And the first thing we went down there, and the dust on the cars was just like, there was still dust coming out of that area. It was still like being pushed to where cars were covered in like grime.
You know, I felt so detached from it. I've never been to New York. It was a whole nother world for me. It was like watching it in another country. And as ridiculous as this sounds, I, at the time, would listen every morning to the Howard Stern Show.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing these people that I felt like I knew that were supposed to be these funny, comic people breaking out and covering the story was what really made it real for me, was hearing the panic and the horror in Howard Stern's voice, because he was supposed to be the guy that doesn't get ruffled and everything's light and funny to him. And then I got it.
And this morning, this will be Monday morning on the 12th, because we're recording this on Monday, Don Geronimo, who's here in Sacramento now, the Don and Mike show was doing their week out of New York when that happened. And all morning on the 12th here, he played his tapes of what it was like for them to cover that happening in the city there. So I honestly can't listen to any of it. Like, when they were doing stuff with the NFL yesterday, I had to change the channel. I just hit lat, and you know, my TV ended up on Lifetime, and I still was like, okay, this is better than just completely losing control and crying. Because and then I remembered, and I posted this on Facebook yesterday on September 11th. One of the things was that profound sense of confusion and loss when it happened. And the next thing was the profound amount of pride in my country that I felt over the next weeks and months as everybody came together. Just, you know, we're Americans. This is, you know, we're going to recover from this. And Sean was talking about it earlier with, like, Vermonters recovering from it. Really yeah. comes from that basic level. And then I started to, as we're 10 years out, start to reflect upon how that trust and how that goodwill has eroded away. And we have a Congress that won't even essentially talk to our president because it doesn't push their agenda forward. It's no longer about what's best for the country. And that makes me sad, but it makes me really, really angry. And I think it should make everybody angry. And Paul Krugman, who is he's a columnist. He does a bunch of stuff. He basically said something similar to that in a New York Times op-ed piece. And now there's a group of people trying to sort of censor him, saying you don't say that stuff on 9/11. Well, it needs to be said. People took advantage of that goodwill, mm-hmm. and I'm not gonna doubt. I'm not gonna point fingers at presidents and vice presidents and corporations and anybody else, but the goodwill of the American people coming out of that time of tragedy was taken, it was twisted, it was manipulated, and it was wrung out, and it was wrung out of it. And now you've got groups of people on both sides of the spectrum who are very, very angry. They're just angry. You hear it from really liberal people. You hear it from really conservative people, the Tea Party. They're just angry, and they hate each other. And coming from a point in America where after we were attacked that it didn't matter who you were or what you do, you are an American, you're my brother, to now this petty bickering just pisses me off.
And meanwhile, you can definitely go and buy your Sacramento Bee with its special 9/11 memory edition issue inside of it. I'm just saying that's the type of things that I guess that upsets me. On the other end, also, you know.
And you know what? I'm not gonna go there because I was at Ground Zero in 2009, and they have a store there where they sell videotapes, it's DVDs and books, like coffee table books of 9/11. And I can't grasp how anybody would be able to have a coffee table book of 9/11, but I understand that people cope with things in different ways. So I'm not going to begrudge anybody that. I'm not going to begrudge anybody who watched the coverage or anything like that. Yeah. I just think we should all sort of, 10 years later, instead of looking back at the towers falling, I think we should just sort of remember the feeling as we came together afterward.
Exactly.
Because that's really kind of what we need to do. So anyway,
that was so profound, Nate.
Kind of a downer way to end the show, but that's what's pissing me off this week. I didn't start it out that way. What's pissing me off this week, really liberal people and really conservative people and people who've sort of lost sight of who we are as a country and how great we can be and how petty all of you brainless motherfuckers have become just 10 short years later. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of the Nate Darling Show. Go out on a high note, kids. Thanks again to Sean Greenwood from Ben and Jerry's in a lighter time of the show.
Oh, very
go
light.
Ahead and get yourself some sweaty balls.
Yum.
Put them in your mouth.
Swish them around.
Lick them. Love them.
Yeah, get to the bottom of a pint if that's what you need to do. Thanks to my friend Jason Casey for sitting in for Larry, who was busy playing gay softball. But he's here for the next show, so we'll slide him in for that one. Thanks again to Mel for sitting next to me on the couch and listening to me rant about how people have become assholes.
My pleasure as always.
All right. So everybody, think about that as you go through the next week and enjoy a pint of Ben and Jerry's. So that's it for this edition of the Nate Darling Show. Remember, we're all forever young. We'll see you next time.